You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If I could have your attention, please. I'm Martin Indyk, the director of the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings. It's a real honor and a pleasure for me personally to have the opportunity to host Sheikh Hamad and thank him for his friendship over actually two decades now. When we first had the idea at Brookings at Strobe Talbot, our president spoke about of trying to deal with the divide created in the between the United States and the Islamic world in the wake of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. I first came to Sheikh Hamad and explained to him that we were going to be launching this project. And he said immediately, I will support it, but you have to do the conference in Doha. And I said, Doha, well, that sounds like an interesting idea. And that's what we did. And 10 years later, we're celebrating a decade of efforts to bridge the divide, thanks to the support of Sheikh Hamad and his commitment to this project of building better relations between the United States and the Muslim world. 3 years into that, he suddenly then told me we want to have a Brookings in Doha, and I said, oh well, okay, we'll have a Brookings in Doha too, and we ended up with the Brookings Doha Center. And so it's been that his vision has led us to two great enterprises that he has been the supporter of, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has worked with us on all of these years. I'm very glad to welcome here Ambassador Mohammed Al-Ramehi, the Qatari ambassador who was the Minister for Follow-Up Affairs working for Sheikh Hamad and our partner in these enterprises. I want to also welcome all the other ambassadors that have joined us this evening to honour Sheikh Hamad. We're now on the record, and therefore you can tweet away. I have the opportunity now to do what I appreciate so much. We've done it many times before, to have a conversation with Sheikh Hamad. I want to start, if I could, Sheikh Hamad, with some of the enterprises that you've been so involved in. And this is really kind of a general question, which is, when you see all this turmoil in the Middle East, how do you view Qatar's role in terms of trying to influence things? Why is Qatar so actively engaged in trying to change the situation? What's your strategy and strategic objective?
Well, you remember, Martin, we make many bets between me and you. And I won the last bet. Is that right?
That's right.
And you pay me the dollar. Well, we know each other's for...
Careful, we're on the record here. So.
It's only $1. But what about the bet? That's the well, first of all, thank you very much. Martin, you've been friends. We know each other for two decades. We work in many issues. Sometimes in a good time, sometimes in a bad times, but we work together as a friend, as a partner, when you are in, when you are out the government. And it's my pleasure to be a friend to you. Well, Qatar in the middle of what's happening, how we can see it, what we can see it. You remember, and I say this publicly, even in Brookings, that things will change in the Middle East, cannot stay where it was. In the Middle East, we was in a moment before all the Arab Spring happened, a moment where we are standstill. Most of the leaders, they care about their position, how they give their children, their sons, to be predecessor. And they just want things to stay as it is. Probably, or most of the countries which I'm talking about, they have prosperities. They can have better economy, better education, better health care. But most of the focus was in the security. Security not for the people, security for the regime, let me put it this way. And over the last 30 years or 40 years, they built a skill, a very good skill, to keep the situation in hand. Keep the security, I mean the security not the, for the country, I mean for the leaders or for their position. They managed to do that for 30, 40 years. But they never think over this 30, 40 years to spend part of that time to do something for their countries so the people, they can say, okay, there is a stability, political stability, but there is economical, other prospects, transparency, freedom of speech. So it went on, and then the leaders start to forget that they have an agreement with the people. They thought that the people have to agree with them of what they have to do, and they just drift away from the mission to, if you want to call it a God mission, or, and that means the leaders, he know what you cannot know or anyone know. And the people around them, of course, they want to live. So they follow the same foot and they try to defend the situation in these countries. And it went on, and the fire start to be accumulated more and more with the people. No education, no jobs, no work. And it started in a simple city in Tunisia. By the way, I was in Tunisia 2 weeks before what happened in Tunisia. And I was talking with the president about what could happen in Tunisia, and there is a poor places, and why you don't do kind of housing, jobs, trying to create things. And I say we can put program. Qatar could help in program, because that His Highness' vision is to help these countries if they want to help themselves. But maybe not because it's too late, but the wish of the leaders, all the fund they needed for the security or for their own business, which it lead to what happened in the region. What happened in the region is a revolution by all means. And I think we are in the beginning. I'm sorry to say that. I think it's not finished. And it's a big tsunami wave coming. We cannot choose for the countries who's their leaders or which party should win. But in the end, there will be democracy, in my opinion, after what happened in the region. What kind of democracy? I think this is each country have to see the way of the will of the people, how they want it.
If we turn to our
region, okay. You want to? I want to talk about our region, which is a bit sensitive, little bit. I will not be. It's not, it will not be good, but I have to talk. We don't have full democracy, but we don't have full dictatorship. And it seems that there is a relation between us and the people, you know, because I cannot say this; it has to be said by somebody else. An independent. I'm not an independent guy, But it seems that there is a relation between the leadership and the people, and the communication is more easy. Yes, there is mistakes in our region. Yes, we need to enhance a lot of regulation, a lot of rules, a lot of things. But if we can see in the wealth side, if we compare, for example, the wealth in Qatar, I don't want to talk with any other about any other country, and compare it with Libya, for example, which they are very rich in very unique places with excellent people. They have knowledge. They work everywhere in the world. But for 42 years, Gaddafi destroyed them. If you go to Qatar, you can see the prosperities. You can, yes, there is a mistake. We cannot say that everything is right. But I believe Qatar, in the middle of all what's happening here, we decided that we want what the people want of the Middle East. We are not going to choose or prefer anybody to lead any other countries. That's the job of the people in each country. So for us, our position is to help, to assist if we can, because we need stability after what happened in these regions.
So I think that's very clear, and there's plenty of history to point to the way in which Qatar is on the side of the people, which is a basic principle. But lately, there is the impression created that Qatar is on the side of the people, but also it's on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood, that whether it's you're bailing out of the Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt, or your support for the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, or Hamas in Gaza, there's the impression that you're taking sides. And I wonder if you could address that.
I am happy for this question, because this thing's been spread a lot in Washington. And I know how it's been spread. And you know from your old mission, me and you together, we know how the rumors in the Middle East happen. And when we are upset from each other, how we can try to make rumors against each other in the Middle East. But now this is a cheap way. Why it's a cheap way? Because I know that our memory is short. But in the same times, there is a document, like TV, internet, whatever you want. When we start support the Tunisian uprising, there was no Islamic Brotherhood. And when we visited Tunisia, the Emir, the Crown Prince, myself, there was no Islamic governments in Tunisia. When we announced that we are going to support them financially by $500 million, there was no Islamic government in Tunisia. And that money being given before the Islamic governments come. The Tunisian people choose the Islamic governments. And we should respect what the Tunisian people want to have. We did not elect this government. You can say we love them or we don't love them. That's another situation. But we will respect anything being chosen by the people, not by us. We cannot dictate to the Tunisian people which government they should be. If they choose tomorrow another government, we will stay friends and will stay supportive for them, because that's their own choice. It is same in Egypt, everybody talking about Islamic Brotherhood. And Qatar is supporting them. Also, I know, and you know, that these rumors come from our region. Fine, we expect this, we've been used to this, we don't mind. But again, I will go to the history. When the army in Egypt take over, the first visit was by the Crown Prince and the Emir, and after myself, before any Islamic governments. When the government of Issam Sharaf came to power, we announced our package, and we paid our first aids to Egypt by supporting financially and by giving some loans to Egypt. It happened away before any Islamic brother would come. And when the people choose the Islamic Brotherhood, after that, we cannot stop in the middle of the road, because that's also the choice of the people of Egypt. So for us, we deal with the governments, and we fulfill our commitment with the governments which we deal with it. We cannot go back in our commitment. And our theory in that, that today they choose an Islamic government. Tomorrow they might choose another government. After 3 years, they will have election. And they will have parliamentary elections this year in Egypt. Whatever the people of Egypt will decide, we will respect. Egypt is a very important and a big Arab country. And important not only for the region, for you, for Israel, for everybody. Stability and instability in Egypt, it's a very dangerous game. And now there is play in Egypt for instability of Egypt. That game, you can take this as a bet, will not bring the people which they like to bring. But it will bring chaos to the street. And when there is a chaos in the street, there is the extremists which we are forgetting them. Extremists which they can come in the street and cause for all of us problem in the biggest Arab country. While the Islamic Brotherhood, which I don't want to talk on their behalf, they respect all their agreements with Israel, and they announce this publicly, and they respect all the other agreements. When there was incidents in the border, they act immediately. What we need from them? In my opinion, some of our region, they did not like all what happened as a revolution in the beginning. And they don't like it when the Islamic Brotherhood come, but they did not like it before in the first group. So for me, it's nothing new. And I respect their view. I respect their view. Maybe they have a point. Maybe we are wrong. But as a small country, a small nation, we don't want anybody to interfere in our affair in Qatar, but we respect the other will and the people will in the other nations.
Let me raise another story that's out there. As Undersecretary Sherman said, praising Qatar, you led the way in Syria against a brutal regime that is killing its own people. Maybe over 70,000 now. Huge refugee problem. Terrible situation. But the story around is that Qatar, in taking the lead, has been also providing arms to what they refer to as the bad guys, the Nusra Front, the Al-Qaeda types. I wonder if you might address that.
I will tell you, we did not want to take the lead. We beg a lot of countries to start to take the lead, and we'll be in the back seat. But we find ourselves in the front seat, the end. That's a fact, and that's true. First of all, if you remember what happened in Syria, it was not a revolution, but it was uprising, asking for a few things. And they faced the first day with 160 guys in Daraa killed, men and women and children in Daraa killed, first day. Then His Highness the Emir talked with Bashar by phone and sent him the Crown Prince, told him, some action need to be taken. You have to do a few things to try to get control of the situation. And that means you need to give up a lot of things, and you need the people around you to check who's doing his job or who is not doing his job. A month later, I went and see Bashar, and I have a long conversation with him. And I told him, you know, he went, for example, in the parliament to do speech, which they say support, it will be important speech. He was joking, and people was the blood in the street, and he was joking, and he was making some jokes, you know, in the parliament, as nothing happened. So there was no serious speak to the nation and to the people which they've been killed and wounded. Second things, he say he will have a big meeting with the oppositions, but we saw that it was a joke. And I told him, there is a virgin, or there is a say, I think I start saying this, before Bouazizi and after Bouazizi. There is a way to rule in our region before Bouazizi, and there is a rule now to rule in our region after Bouazizi. And you have to think here that you are after Bouazizi, so things have to change. I don't want to go to details, but there was promises and things, and nothing happened. Then I went with the Arab League, leading the Arab League, because I am the chair of the Arab League in the Syrian matter. And we get the conclusion that he's buying time, he wants to kill people. Then we came to our friends and start to take the matter in the Arab League for a few months before we come to you or anyone. Try to solve it, sending monitoring team, taking a lot of resolutions, try to talk to him. Then we find the guy, he have one way only, kill and kill and kill until you win. Then we went to the United Nations, and I went by myself there. Unfortunately, there is the dispute in the United Nations. But also, I have to say that we have to say, or we have to do more. United States have to do more. I believe that if we stop this 1 year ago, we will not see the bad people which you are talking about. If this will take longer, we'll see more bad people. If we don't have, if we consider ourselves good people to help the good people in Syria, there will be bad people will help them. Bashar will leave either through us and the international community and our friends to give the freedom to the people and to stop the killing in Syria, or the other terrorist group which we say, they will take him out. But later, don't blame us or you blame yourself, because it will be our mistake together not to intervene. I don't say that intervene by sending troops or by doing action. I am not going to the details, but we need to do to act together seriously to stop this. He used, you know, we put a lot of red lines. Scott, he used Scott. Chemicals, he used chemicals. And there is evidence. But he used it in a bucket, small buckets. He want to try your reaction. No reaction, he will escalate. You know, he was start using only the what we call it, the bullets, then tanks, then airplane, then rockets, then chemicals. So it's testing what is the level where you stop. You say don't send the weapon or help the other, while there is countries helping him. For me, or for Qatar, we did not support any troops or any bad guys, what you mentioned. We did not give any aids financially or any other kind of aids to these people. As you know, there is an operation room. Everybody knows it. It's not secret. In Jordan and in Turkey, and we are dealing through this operation room with our ally, including United States. So this rumor, again, it's between families, which sometimes, you know, jealous, sometimes we tease each other. Don't go to this business, Martin. You know this business for 20 years.
You said that he's used chemical weapons. What do you think that the United States should do now about that?
I think we've been talking with your administration last 2 days. Do you think we should say it publicly? But I think we should say we need to do something, and I don't mean a military action, but we need to do something. And I'm sure your governments know what they should do and what they can do.
Iran, heavily involved in supporting the Assad regime and continuing to pursue its nuclear ambitions. You, of course, are just across the Gulf. They are your neighbors. Are you worried about the way things are developing there on the nuclear front? And how do you see that developing?
You know, my friend, we always worried from everything.
It's a dangerous neighborhood.
From everyone, not from all our neighbors. But we have a good relation and good understanding with Iran. We don't agree with them in all their policy. They don't agree with all our policy. Fair. If we talk about the nuclear, they have some rights, but we have some rights as a neighbor, and we don't want to see any nuclear weapon in the region. That's something is important for the stability. Officially, they say they don't have any ambitions to have a nuclear weapon, and I hope that this is the case. If that's the case, they have the right to have the know-how. I believe the only way to solve this problem by sitting directly together. I know there is 5+1 meetings, but I think this meetings around the tables and with these photographs, I don't think it will work. There is a lot of meetings could be done and a lot of progress could be done, but as you know, there is red lines for everybody. And you know their red lines, and they know that your red lines. What is important now is both sides have to be serious and have to know that this have to be solved through peaceful talk, through a serious talk, and with a timetable. Setting timetable, not to leave the timetable like this. What I am worried that this will escalate in a moment where we'll have a clash. Seriously, we don't want to see clash in our region. You know, we cannot afford another clash in the region. As you know, the last 30 or 40 years from Saddam when he started first war with Iran and the region from war to war. And I think you don't want a shock of energy. We don't want a shock of instability in the region. And for that reason, we have to find a way. I know that you will be free from the energy things within the next 10 to 15 years, but still there is 10 to 15 years.
I promised Sheikh Hamad that we would have him out of here at 8 o'clock. He's got to take off.
You said before 8 o'clock.
My watch is not working properly. I have one last question for you, if you will allow me. In a similar conversation we had together in Doha a couple of years ago, I asked you about the Arab League Peace Initiative. And you said then that in order to make peace, you have to talk to your enemy, just like you suggested now, the United States should talk to Iran. By the way, the United States is happy to talk to Iran. It's Iran that doesn't want to talk with us bilaterally. But anyway, you said then that, you know, you have to talk to your enemy if you're going to make peace, and the Arab League Peace Initiative needs to deal with Israel. You're coming back to Washington this weekend to meet with Secretary Kerry. Secretary Kerry is putting an incredible amount of effort into trying to restart negotiations, trying to move this process forward. He's genuinely concerned about the window closing on peace between Israel and the Palestinians. And frankly, he needs help of everybody who wants to see peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. What is it that the Arab League can do to help this effort?
Let me first start. Secretary John Kerry came to Doha, and we met for a long time about this subject. And we talk over phone, and we will see him Monday. Myself as the chair of the peace initiative, unfortunately, every problem they put me the chair of.
Well, there are four of you, so yeah. It's your own fault.
but it will not be for a long time anyway. I am encouraged with the way that Secretary John Kerry wants to deal with this problem. He's taking it serious. Priority. He wants to do something. He knows that the window is not long. And I think he knows what needs to be done. The problem, the parties. And I want to be very frank. The Arab is one of the parties, an important parties. Israel, when they want to have a peace between them and the Palestinians, they want to have a peace between them and the Arabs. I understand this, and it's legitimate. And for that, I don't see any problem that the Arab talk with the Israelis. But we talk when there is a real proposal in the table, or real idea actually in the table. Yes, everyone could say this is accepted, this is not accepted, but the mediator have to come with an idea. All of us, we know what is the solution. All of us know the solution. The land of 67 with little swap, same value. I think there is a lot of drafts. Some of it we know about it. Some of it has been hidden somewhere else about the solution. It needs leaders, strong leaders, to do and to have the gut in this. And I think it needs a mediator who should be fair and insisting to finish this in a timetable. I am worried that this is like the Arab situation, when I say 30, 40 years with everything going okay. After 73, the war of 73, we have almost peace in the region. But how long this peace could stay? Okay, today we have a reasonable people. Maybe within 20 years we don't have reasonable people. Either this side or this side. And then we have a big war, and then we have a clash. And Israel want to live in a peace, the Arab, they want to live in a peace, but everything, the right have to be given to their own people. And the right to give the Palestinian the land of 67, as I mentioned, with some swaps, agreeable swaps between both sides. That's the beginning of the solution. Then we understand security have to be said, immigrants have to be done. A lot of issues. Also, financially, we have to give the Palestinian prosperities to build their cities, to build their place. We cannot tell them, take this land and stay you are, and you have to behave well. They see people, their neighbor in Israel, living a certain life. They want to live something similar to that life. So we have to be also practical. What is the solution? How we can come to the solution? And I believe the solution need leaders locked in a place and finish the job. And if they don't finish the job, I think United States have to say, okay, you go to the Security Council, that's the place, I'm finished. I know the tie between United States and Israel, and I respect this totally. I know the commitment. But within 50 years, 30 years, the American people will start thinking, okay, we have at that time maybe more than 200 or 300 Arabs, 2 billion Muslims. We are having all these conflicts with them because of Israel. Somebody will come and say, okay, let us reevaluate economically, politically, security, whatever the situation. What he will find? He will find different value for the two. So my advice, as a guy like to see the peace, and you know, Martin, we work a lot for that. I work a lot. I have a lot of criticism by working for the peace. My country have a lot of criticism by working for the peace. I would love and I will be so happy to see the peace in our region. You know, I am in the end of my career, and I would like to see a peace because I know economically prosperity in the region could be different. We can live and be, you know, when I go to Europe now, my plane have to tear around Israel. Why? I lose fuel. Israel lose $400-$500 to be paid for them, for my you know, that's a small example. That's a small example. The Israeli have the same problem. Why? They have the same problem. So we need to live together. But to live together, it have a price from both sides have to be done.
So, but just to press this point, what is the Arab League going to do to help Senator
we would like,
Secretary Kerry make
we
that
would
happen?
Like to show our willingness to work with the administration here as a partner for the peace. And we have the Arab Initiative. That could be a base to start working in it. And we are ready to hear, to listen. But there is principles have to be respected between the both sides.
Sheikh Hamad, I'm not sure what you mean by your career is coming to an end. But
coming to the end.
Well, so is mine, but you know, that's not for a few years, and I hope it won't be for a few years. And whatever happens, I know that you have been a great friend of America, a great friend of Brookings, and we hope that this will last well into the future. Thank you so much for everything you've done for us.
Thank you.
For the United States and for the Middle East.
Thank you, Martin.
Much.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate this.